Today's story is about a farmstead that's located out in Hidden Springs. You may have heard of it, but maybe not. I had not heard of it until this story. It's called the Schick Astolassa Farmstead, and this is the oldest continuously inhabited farmhouse in the entire state of Idaho. And the barn that's on the property, which was recently restored, which I'll tell you about, is the oldest standing barn in the Boise area, but possibly in the entire state. And, you know, Idaho has a lot of barns, so that's saying something. The story was written by Sharon Fisher, and today I'm reading it. Of course, as always, you can find photos in the newsletter, and I recommend you go check them out because I have a bunch of, historic photos in there as well as new photos. I always like that when you get to see, you know, how it originally looked and how it looks today. All right. You can find those in the newsletter, which is in your inbox or at friendboise.com. Okay. This story is called 100 Years of History Hiding in Hidden Springs, and it was written by Sharon Fisher, read by me. Sequestered in one of Boise's toniest subdivisions is one of Idaho's oldest farmsteads, lovingly preserved to give visitors a real taste of what 19th century life in Idaho was like. Jay Caramels, chief historian of Dry Creek Historical Society in Boise, said, "The farmhouse itself is the oldest continuously inhabited farmhouse in the state of Idaho." Dry Creek Historical Society was formed in 2005 to help preserve the Schick Astolassa farmstead. Founding the farmstead. The Schick Astolassa farmstead starts with the history of Southwest Idaho itself in August 1862. Caramel said, up until that time, white or Anglo civilization had been following in the footsteps of Lewis and Clark. The farthest output was Fort Hall, near modern-day Pocatello. From the Pacific side, permanent towns and cities had pushed up to what is today Walla Walla, Washington. In between, you had 500 miles of nothing but sagebrush desert, and obviously no infrastructure or anything to support the wagons that had been traversing the Oregon Trail every year since 1842, he said. But in August 1862, the Grimes Party of prospectors peeled off the Oregon Trail and headed north into the mountains and found gold near where Idaho City is now, Caramel said, which is why Idaho City is even there. Word got out quickly, and by the end of 1862, something like 10,000 people had poured into the Boise Basin, with 15,000 people there by the spring of 1863. They weren't all prospectors, Caramel said. They were people who follow miners or come to boom towns to make their living. Bartenders, prostitutes, priests, grocers, freighters, the professions that miners need. One of those people was Philip Schick, born in 1838 in New York, the son of immigrants from Hanover, Germany. He came west after the news of the California gold strike in 1849 when he was old enough, Caramel said. He sailed around Cape Horn to San Francisco and over the next few years worked at various jobs along the west coast between San Francisco and the mouth of the Columbia River. When Schick heard about the gold strike, he was in Lewiston. Caramel said that there were two ways people in the Boise Basin could get what they needed. Food, tools, and everything needed to either be brought in on the backs of pack mules or on ox-drawn wagons. Those were basically the 18-wheelers of the day. Schick signed on with a wagon train of ox-drawn carts to bring supplies from Lewiston and camped where the Home Depot is today at State Street and Highway 55 between Eagle and Garden City. One of the nights they were camped there, the oxen wandered off, Caramel said. Schick had to go track them down. He followed them over some hills into what we now call the Dry Creek Valley, with lush, waist-high grass. Fortunately for Schick, in February of 1862, the federal government had signed the Homestead Act, which made it easier for settlers to obtain land. If you came out west, you could find up to 160 acres of unclaimed land, stake a claim, live on it for 5 years, and make improvements showing that you intend to stay there, and then you could apply to have that land given to you, Caramel said. Schick came back in 1864 with George Banker and took out the first homestead in Dry Creek Valley. Caramel said, quote, everybody else coming in wanted to seek their fortune panning for gold, but Schick never engaged in the mining business. He wanted to set up a home, developing the farmstead. With a tent, a couple of horses, and some hand tools, Schick and Banker started one of the first farms in the Boise area, which officially became a city in July of 1863. It was a great place for a farm. While the average soil depth in the area was 6 inches, the Dry Creek area had 66 inches of volcanic soil, as well as the creek itself for water. Schick and Banker planted corn, rye, barley, and vegetables. Vegetables were especially in very short supply, so short that miners were coming down with scurvy. Later, Schick bought out Banker's share and gained some neighbors. A lot of people came right on their heels and established homesteads, Caramel said. It wasn't for the faint-hearted. People from the East had no idea how to make a living grubbing sagebrush and planting crops. They'd come out, yay, free land, set up a homestead, find out how hard it was, and then move on. Consequently, Schick was able to acquire additional acreage, including a parcel of land closer to Dry Creek that had a year-round cold water spring. Around that time, Albert Roby and Alexander Rossi came down from Lewiston, and they set up the area's first sawmill on Schaefer Creek, up in the hills north from Dry Creek. Caramel said, quote, Schick bought some lumber, built himself a one-room cabin, and dragged the cabin to the new acreage the next spring. That's where the farmhouse is now. It's the center part of the house that is his original cabin. The house and the farmstead grew over time, as Schick got cattle, chicken, and hogs, and ran either cattle or sheep, depending on the market. The farm grew to 500 acres, and Schick was prosperous enough to start thinking about a family. In 1870, Schick courted and married Mary Yarian, the daughter of a family from Indiana that had settled closer to the river near where the quarry is in Eagle right now. In 1873, they had their first and only child, Clara. It really was the Wild West back then, Caramel said, noting that militias were formed to fight off attacks from Native Americans and that outlaws were robbing stagecoaches at the same time that the Schicks lived in the valley. But there's no record that the Schick family had any trouble. In 1879, when Clara was six and the Schicks had been in the valley for 15 years, the valley was all homesteaded out. The road from Boise to the Boise Basin at Placerville and Centerville ran through Dry Creek right past the Schick Ranch. He was very well known, Caramel said. If you went to Horseshoe Bend or Pearl, you came right past Schick's ranch. But there was not yet a school in the area, so Schick made a proposition to his neighbors. He would donate the materials to build a schoolhouse if someone else would donate the land. A neighbor, John Glenn, donated a one-acre parcel with the proviso that no dances would be held at the school. Thus, the Dry Creek School, sometimes known as the Schick School, was born. To get a teacher, Schick offered her free room and board at his farmhouse. So then he had to buy more lumber, and he built a living room and added two bedrooms on a second story. He went from a frontier cabin to a pretty prosperous Western farmhouse, Caramel said. At that time, it had no kitchen or bathroom, but he built a separate building on top of the cold water spring, which became the kitchen. And that's basically how the farmhouse that you see today grew into its present configuration. This episode of From Boise is sponsored by Rolling Hills Vineyard. I love a family business. I think it's so cool to see families chasing their dreams together. I recently got to meet the owners of Rolling Hills Vineyard in Garden City, and I loved learning more about their winery and checking out their beautiful urban tasting room. Rolling Hills has some incredibly delicious wines and the awards to prove it. When you go to their tasting room, you can pick from what feels like an endless list of wine options, including some NA wine. And you can pair it with a tasty snack like a Formaggio charcuterie board or Grand Teton chocolate mousse cake. Yum! All that and a patio with super comfy seating. You really cannot go wrong. Rolling Hills also does private events for any special occasions that you might have coming up, from birthday parties to family gatherings. Rolling Hills is the perfect place to grab a drink after work, have a date night, or it's also a really great place to bring friends or family that might be visiting you this spring or summer. You can read more about Rolling Hills and take a peek at their menu at rollinghillsvineyard.com, and you can find that link in the show notes. adding the Astolassas. In 1902, a bizarre accident happened and Schick died. He and Mary were coming home from Boise in a buggy with groceries and supplies, and they had just gotten over the rise from what is now Pierce Park Road, Caramel said, and he had flames billowing off his back and didn't notice. Eventually, he passed out, and Mary was able to roll him into Dry Creek, but all his clothes had burned off, and his back was so badly burned that they could almost see the bones. For 3 days, he lingered before he passed. Mary continued to live at the ranch after his passing, while Claire and her husband, Forrest C., who had a house in Boise, would sometimes come out and live with her for a while. Eventually, Clara and Forrest bought the ranch from Mary, and they ran it. In 1920, they sold it to an investor, a banker from Boise named Frank Parsons, who owned property all over the Treasure Valley to give himself an income stream. But Frank needed someone to run it for him. Parsons was a good friend of sheep rancher Colin McLode, whose ranch was where the Avamore Planned Community is now. In 1927, Parsons hired one of McLode's Basque sheep herders, Costin Ostolassa, to run the ranch. And Costin ran that until 2005. In 1942, Parsons died, and his estate sold the ranch to the two Deschambeau brothers from Garden Valley who lived in Eagle. They were running cattle between their feedlot and Dry Creek. He had very progressive ideas, Caramel said. He upgraded the farmhouse and made it one of the first in Dry Creek to have electricity and a telephone. In 1942, the farmhouse gained an indoor kitchen, and in the early 1950s, a pantry was turned into an indoor bathroom. Up until that time, the women's outhouse had been just out the back, and then the men's outhouse was 100 yards away behind the horse barn. Around 1979, the Deschambeau brothers wanted to retire, and developers were buying up land in the foothills. They sold the ranch to a consortium of developers who had plans for Dry Creek, Caramel said. The Ostolassas continued to live in the house and work the ranch while the Hidden Springs Planned Community started its first phase of construction in 1997, restoring the farmstead. Phase 5 of the Hidden Springs construction was expected to move the Ostolassas to a new house for 10 years for free, tear down the farmstead, including the house, the barn, and the outbuildings. Fortunately, the early residents of Hidden Springs, including archaeologist Claudia Dress, had gotten to know the Ostolassas and knew how historically important the farmstead was, Caramel said. With the bulldozer literally on the property, they founded the Dry Creek Historical Society and arranged a deal where the developer would sell 2 acres of the property, which included the farm and the barnyard, to Ada County, and then Ada County leases it to the society for $1 a year. The Dry Creek Historical Society took possession of the property in 2005. The Ostolassas did move to a new house for 10 years, which gave the Dry Creek Historical Society the opportunity to begin preserving the farmhouse and setting it up as an agricultural museum for Southwest Idaho. They also started preserving all of the outbuildings. The granary was about to fall over, Caramel said. Now, the Dry Creek Historical Society has preserved nearly all of the historical buildings and farm features. They restored the granary, the woodshed, the barn, and the farmhouse. The organization has also been working on an educational program that tells not only the story of this historic farmstead, but of agricultural farming in Southwest Idaho. The restoration project has been very successful. That said, there have been a few casualties. It's pretty hard to keep 160-year-old buildings standing, Caramel said. There's always something. For example, in the 1950s, lightning hit a tree which fell and smashed the blacksmith shop. They didn't need a blacksmith shop on the property anymore because they weren't repairing old metal tools, so they decided to never put it back. The Dry Creek Historical Society is considering using archaeology to show the boundaries of where that building was and have a couple local blacksmiths out to give demonstrations, he said. It's incidents like that that are Caramel's biggest fear, along with fire. There's a great photo in the house from 1890 or 1900 that shows the house and women of different ages and their babies sitting on the lawn. And at the corner of the white picket fence, there's a sapling tree that's about 6 feet high, he said. It's a silver maple now that's over 100 feet tall and just massive. We've had to trim the branches that hang over the house, and I'm always very leery whenever the wind picks up. The Schick Ostalasa Farmstead was also named to the National Register of Historic Places in 2006. Claudia, who was the driving force behind organizing the society in the first place, did all the research and paperwork, Caramel said. In addition, she published a book in 2015 called Dry Creek Chronicles, which talks about every single homesteader in Dry Creek, decade by decade, who they were and what they grew. Altogether, there's been 5 books written about the Dry Creek area. Barn Reborn. One of the biggest projects was preserving the barn, which involved local historian and Finnish woodworking expert Frank Eld. Frank got involved with the Schick Ostalasa Farmstead while working on his master's degree in public history at Boise State University as part of a class project. Eld said, "I'd been there before, but had never actually been in the barn. I took one look and said, I'd like to go in the barn." Eld was known for his work with historic barns to the extent that some people call him, quote, the barn whisperer. He helped found the Barn Registry for Preservation Idaho, based on a similar program in the state of Washington, and had dismantled and moved a barn in historic Rosebery. "Everybody loves a barn," Eld said, citing the slogan he created for the Preservation Idaho program. In his almost 50 years of restoration in Rosebery, the barn drew more volunteers than any other activity, and the same has been true for the barn at Dry Creek, he said. Eld's first step was to research the barn. "When I walked into the barn, I said, this is different. It's nothing else like I've seen in Idaho. There's a story here, and I'm going to find it." What struck Eld about the Schick barn was the size of its posts and beams. "They were very large," he said. "An Idaho barn would typically have posts that were 8x8, but these were 10x10 with 8x8 crossbeams." So he started reading about what was written about barns. New York barns have larger beams and larger superstructure based on barns from Germany and other European countries. Schick was from upstate New York and of German history, so that explained the size of the beams. Other differences between the Schick barn and typical Idaho barns were that there were no passage door for a wagon, no windows, and vertical boards to light an air in, rather than the board and batten construction typical of Western barns. The front was also featured square holes. "It took me a while to run that one down," Eld said. "They're typical in New England barns." They were pigeonholes or bird holes, which allowed birds to come in and feed on the fleas and other vermin in the barn. Also, if the farmer needed something to eat, he could just go over to the barn and shoot himself a pigeon, he said. When you think about it, it made sense for Schick's barn to look like the one from New York. "Normally, when you move to a new area, you would build a barn like your neighbors," Eld said, but he had no neighbors. He was the first one there, so he built what he was used to from New England. Similarly, Eld tracked down the provenance of an unusual axe he found in the barn. "My research quickly revealed that the axe is a New England style used in the mid-19th century, usually for hewing ship's beams," he said. "Last year, I bought an almost identical one in Massachusetts. Both have a maker's mark, but they're nearly illegible, except for a fairly clear auburn stamp on Schick's axe." After researching more than a year, Eld couldn't find any toolmakers in Auburn, New York that made such an axe. Then he ran across a book of historic axes. In it, he found his axe. It had been made by the Underhill Edge Tool Company in Auburn, New Hampshire. He soon tracked down the company, the home of which now houses the Auburn Historical Society, who was delighted with the find, and they were able to confirm that it was built by the company sometime after 1845. Preserving the barn has been a big job. "Of course, the roof was absolutely gone," Eld said. "It was rotting, leaking like a sieve, and the beams around the bottom were all rotted out. They needed to be stabilized first." At that point, what Eld calls his, quote, Finnish karma came into play. It was time to start the project, and he was wondering where he was going to get these 10x10 beams. "Out of the blue, I got an email message forwarded by Jay from Bruce Rie. He and his sons had a mill for themselves, and Jay helped him out on some research, and he wanted to know what he could do in return for Dry Creek. I said, you are the godsend of what we need right now. Normally, such beams would have cost $5,000 to $10,000 to purchase," Eld said. Eld directed the project to replace the roof, which normally would have been a $30,000 project for the labor alone, and due to volunteers and donations, cost just $13,000 for the materials. Another interesting discovery during the barn restoration project was the discovery of two holes, which is where they would have pitched hay into the barn, and these holes had been covered up at some point. At first, Els suspected that these holes were for pitching hay, but he wasn't 100% certain. That's where Els' barn whispering skills came into play. I noticed that the siding boards were worn away from hay rubbing on it, and we could also see pitchfork marks along the sides, he said, which verified his thought. They also came to the conclusion that the holes had been covered up at a later date because when they pulled the boards off, they had been put into place using round nails, whereas the rest of the barn used square nails. As of just a few days ago, like last week, the barn is officially complete. The inside and the outside of the barn has been completely restored. Everything from the walls to the ceiling to the floor has been replaced, reinforced, and or repainted. They also put a few plywood farm animals in to stand in the places where farm animals would have been living, so visitors can get an even better feel for what life on the farm was like. Visiting the Schick Astalasta Farmstead. Today, the Dry Creek Historical Society has a 17-member board and 170 active members, many of whom live in Hidden Springs or in the Dry Creek Valley. The society is also gaining new members from the Cartwright Ranch Plan community, Avamore, Eagle, Boise, even some members from out of state. Caramels has himself moved to the area in 2011 from Virginia, where he'd been interested in Civil War and World War II history since the 1980s. When I heard there was a historical society here, I joined, he said. The original generation was aging, moving away, or just didn't have time. Within a year, they asked me to be on the board, he said. He did serve a couple of terms as president, but he much prefers his role as historian. I'd much rather do historical research and preservation than run an organization, he said. The farmstead itself is open to the public from the first weekend in May to the last weekend in September on Saturdays from 12:30 to 4:30 p.m., as well as by arrangement. This Saturday, May 4th, from 12:30 to 4:30, is the 2024 opening day, and it's also the 160th anniversary festivities out at the farmstead. There will be pictures available on a historic tractor, demonstrations, refreshments, tours of the barn and farmhouse. Fort Boise Garrison reenactors will be there. There will also be some live music. Admission to this is totally free, but donations are very much appreciated. The Dry Creek Historical Society also holds Old Time Farm Day in September, which spreads across the farmstead's 2 acres as well as into the Hidden Springs Community Barn, which is next door. In addition to live music and food, the event features historical exhibits and events like gold panning, sheep herding, dogs, soap and candle making, laundry, Lewis and Clark, and Civil War reenactors. Throughout the year, the farmhouse also holds front porch concerts. The Dry Creek Historical Society has received a number of awards for historic preservation from organizations such as Preservation Idaho and the Ada County Historic Preservation Council. Paula Benson with Preservation Idaho said, quote, any group that's dedicated time and money to restoration and rehabilitation of historic projects in Idaho is a real hero to us. It's representing the initial settling of the area as well as its evolution over time as families and ethnic groups settled in this area. It's really a celebration for us and one of our primary missions. In 2007, Preservation Idaho granted the organization a Cultural Heritage Preservation Orchid Award for the farmstead as a whole, and then in 2021, it received another Orchid for Excellence in Historic Preservation for the Granary. The Schick Astalasta Farmstead is located at 5006 West Farm Court in Boise, Idaho, 83714. Opening day, again, is this Saturday, May 4th, 2024, from 12:30 to 4:30 p.m. You can visit drycreekhistory.org for more information and visiting hours. And of course, I've got that link in the show notes for you. All right. Thanks so much for listening.